You're listening to Seminary Dropout, and I'm your host, Shane Blackshear. In cooperation with MissioAlliance.org, straight from my house in Austin, Texas to yours, interviews with leading Christian authors, leaders, and thinkers, because good theology should be for everyone. This is Seminary Dropout. Let's go! Hey friends, it's me, Shane, the host of Seminary Dropout. I wanted to jump in here before the show and let you know that this is the last episode of 2017. I'm going to take the month of December off from publishing. I'll still be recording episodes for next year, but I wanted to let you know the plan is to resume in January. I want to thank everybody for such a great year. It's been so fun talking to all the people I've talked to, sharing these interviews with you, and the wonderful feedback that I've gotten as well. I hope that 2018 is even better. I want to encourage you to review the show if you haven't on iTunes. It really, really does matter. And please share with your friends. It's really important that the show grows and that the audience keeps getting bigger. Not just for selfish reasons, but for sustainability reasons for this show to keep going. So please share. You have no idea what an impact it makes to share an episode on Facebook specifically, and then Twitter as well. I can tell when just a few people have shared on Facebook and Twitter, the listenership really goes up. So I really want to ask you that if you enjoy the show to share it. Okay, one last thing. This episode is with John Mark McMillan, who I've really loved and appreciated his music. He's been on the show once before. He actually came into town to Austin, and we sat down in person. And it's a filled interview, meaning I wasn't here in my office in my little home studio. I was out. We were in a bar, which was kind of serving as a backstage of where he was going to play a little bit later in the day. And so there are sound issues, as there would be in a field interview, unlike a controlled environment. At some point, I think some people walk in the room. I've edited out all that I thought was good to edit out. And the field interviews are just kind of fun. You get a new feel for things. If you want to see the room that we were in, I got some pictures of it. It was just kind of a cool place. So I think that's it. Thanks so much for listening. And again, thanks for staying with us for 2017. And I hope things are even greater in 2018. So here's the show. My guest, John Mark McMillan, is something of an anomaly. An artist and platinum-selling songwriter, bending genres and defying categorization by carving out his own unique and independent path. With an ear for melody and a poet's eye for metaphor, no topic has been off limits. While each of his albums over the past decade have continued to explore new territory, it's McMillan's ability to give lyric and language to the human experience that many consider his greatest gift. His newest album, Mercury and Lightning, reminds us why we love great songwriters. The exceptional ones find a way to put new words to private musings and desperate feelings until the songs themselves begin to live in our bones.
John Mark, thanks for being with me.
Yeah, man. I'm stoked.
I was listening to the last time that you came on the podcast, yep. And I realized that I didn't know a lot about your early career and how you started.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think you were like, by my math, you were like 23 when your first album came out. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right, yep.
Like, was being a professional musician something you'd always wanted to do?
I think so.
Is that the only job you've had?
Yeah, that's the only job.
That's pretty amazing.
That's not true. I mean, that's the only grown-up job I think I've had. I worked in restaurants for a long time.
I guess that's a grown-up job.
I'm not saying that's not a grown-up job. I'm saying as an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
I got you.
It's about the only job I've ever had. I worked in restaurants. I think I tried to do construction for a little while. Then I actually worked at a church as a youth pastor for like a couple of years. Wait a second. No, I did that for a while. So I've been a professional musician since 2006. So that, how long ago is that?
So
I was 26. So no, I had real jobs. In my early 20s.
When did I can't think of the name of it, something Volume 1 came out, like in 2002?
Yep, Anthology Volume 1. I can't remember exactly when that came out, but I do want to say it was around 2002.
Yeah. So yeah. You were doing that and working other jobs.
Yeah, so I, yes, exactly. And every now and then taking quitting jobs and trying music and then getting back into jobs, and, you know, it sort of came in waves, you know. It was, and finally 2006 was just like, all right,
this is the year,
we're done. And I never worked a regular job again.
Were you secure in that point that you wouldn't have to go back?
Nope, I wasn't.
You only know that in retrospect.
I only know that in, yeah. So my wife and I were sort of like done with our jobs. Like, we were both working at a church. We're just like, this is, we've done it long enough. We didn't take those jobs as part-time jobs that we were going to leave. We'd just done it for a few years, and we're like, this is just not going where, this isn't what we want to do, you know? And so, we're like, well, we don't have any kids yet. Let's just try it, right? So, we left our jobs at the church, and the pastors, people were really cool, really sweet to us. And they, when we left the job, they took up an offering for us.
Oh, nice.
And I think it was like $4,000.
Right? Which is like kind of a big deal,
yes,
at that point.
Totally.
I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Especially back then. I mean, that's still a lot of money. But back then, it was, you know, a whole lot of money. I put that $4,000 in the bank in a savings account. And I told my wife, I was like, we will never touch that money. If we ever touch that money, I'm going to go look for a job. And never had to touch it. So it's still there.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. So that was sort of my, like, that was my signal that, like, okay, you're going to have to go.
Did you have a moment where you thought, like, I guess I'm a professional musician now?
Yeah, yeah. I know. And still every day I'm like, am I really a professional musician? I mean, when it comes down to it, I'm not like a great guitar player or really even a great singer, you know? And I'm really, some days I'm surprised. I'm like, I mean, I'm passionate about what I do. I don't think what I do is not good. But I don't think of myself as being like great. You know, I wake up some days like, I'm like on a tour bus today and I'm traveling with my band. I'm like, I guess I'm doing this. You know what I mean? Like, that happens a lot actually, where I'm like, am I really doing this? Am I still doing this?
Do you feel like with the final package product, do you feel like that's good?
I do. I really do. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I'm not saying that I don't like what I do. I'm just saying, like, most of the people I play with are really technically amazing. All the guys in my band are better than me. You know, it's just, I guess what you want.
Sure.
That's nice. I mean, I want to be the worst member of my band. Not because I'm not good, but because I want to play with guys who are so good, you know? So.
Right.
Yeah. But it was weird. The other day, I realized I've been doing this since 2006.
Yeah.
That's like, what, 15 years or something?
11. Yeah.
Oh, 11.
If it's still 2017, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, why do I keep saying 15? It doesn't. But I was doing it before. Yeah, my math is not adding up here. But I've been doing this for 15 years, if you include the on and off time. And then full time since 2006. So 11 years. And I was like, I guess I'm doing it. Yeah. In fact, I realized the other day, I was like, I don't know what else I would do for a job, really. You know, because, I mean, I could figure something out.
Has your band pretty much been the same guys consistently? Because I know a lot of musical acts.
Yeah, yeah.
They're, you know, like, their drummer will change every gig.
Totally.
Basically.
My guys are pretty consistent. They've changed over the years, but all the guys who are with me now have been with me for years.
Yeah.
Some longer than others. Our drummer Dominique has only been with us for about a year. You know, so he's the newest member. But everyone else has been with us for at least 2 or 3 years, and some of the guys longer than that. Yeah. But I also like consistency, and I like playing with my friends and the community, you know. So
yeah. You're spending a lot of time with these people.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like too, when we first started, if you do like more traditional worship music, the songs are pretty easy to play. And you can swap out band members pretty easy, but there's a lot of nuance to what we do, and it's not so easy to swap somebody out, you know. Even if they know the songs, the way we do it and how it all works is, you know, so I like to have committed guys.
I'm always curious about musicians and as they pertain to creativity, because as somebody who doesn't do, like, I don't have a vocation that uses, like, capital C creativity. And so somebody is on the outside looking in, I'm always curious about it. And I wonder if at this point in your career, if it feels like creativity is like a well that you can go to and it's bottomless and it's always going to be there. Like there's always more where that came from. Or if you wonder, like, tomorrow am I going to wake up and look at a blank page and not know what to put on it?
I feel like most days are actually looking at the blank page, not knowing what to put on it.
Really?
Yeah. So it comes and goes as far, you know.
But I think you've been doing it long enough now where you would know, like, okay, today it was rough, but it's going to come eventually. Or do you?
I still have those times I'm like, man, I haven't written anything good in a few months or even this year. I'm like, I don't like anything I wrote this year. You know, I'm like, is this going to happen? Am I, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think I think that it's going to dry up, but I definitely do think that, like, is what I do relevant or interesting anymore? Sometimes I'm like, I keep thinking, when am I going to put that record out that no one cares about? I feel like that happens. I feel like it happens to every artist. There are very few artists that, like, that doesn't happen to eventually. Either, like, you put one record out and your next record's one no one cares about, or you put 10 records out. But I always feel like, sure, I'm always afraid that that record is going to, I'm like, when is that record coming? The one no one is interested in, you know? But I don't know. That might just me being afraid. You know, sure. Like, because there are people who have had ups and downs in their career, and I think a lot of it is maybe people who have long careers choose, you know, to get back on the horses. Some, I get, maybe others just, that record doesn't work and they just kind of walk away, you know, but I don't know. But I'm always afraid that that's going to happen. I'm always really nervous.
I was reading this piece on the AV Club this week, actually, where the writer was saying, basically, this year, Beck and Weezer both put out an album. Did you read it?
I did. I read that.
Isn't it fascinating?
It was.
And he was basically saying, he was kind of, to me, it sounded like he was saying, they're fine albums, yep, but people didn't care much.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah. I didn't hear the Weezer album. I heard the Beck album, and I really like the Beck album, but those first couple singles he put out were so good.
Yeah.
I felt like...
On that album.
I mean, you know, obviously I need to sit with the record more, but I felt like when those singles came out really early, you know, I don't know, I'm not saying the rest of the record isn't good, but I kind of wanted the whole record to be like those two singles. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to say that because I hope people don't feel that way about my songs too, but, you know, yeah, but on the Weezer, yeah, I don't really know. I had a lot of questions reading that article. You know, like, I know Beck took a lot of time off from touring. He kind of was out of the light for a little bit. The other thing is, I think that people are consuming music differently.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, I don't know that. Well, for instance, okay, some of my favorite bands, The National, one of my favorite bands, Fleet Foxes, mm-hmm, one of my favorite bands, and there's a handful of others, all put out records this year, and I've heard songs from their records, but I have not listened to the whole record.
Yeah.
And it's not because I don't like them. I love them. I'm going to love the whole record. It's just the way so much music hitting so fast now. Listen to two songs on that new National record. Like, this is awesome. Listen to that. This is awesome. I'm like, I want to listen to Rihanna. You know what I mean? It's like our attention span is just like we're all over the place.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think Beck and Weezer, you know, Beck especially, like, I think really, like, radio has really been his thing. I mean, he's had huge radio hits, and radio is next level. When you have a huge radio hit, that's next level. Even for the guys I know who are killing it, you know, they're not killing it anywhere like the people who have the huge radio singles. Even now,
right?
You know,
right.
Like, and so maybe he doesn't have that going on this go around. He doesn't have the radio hit yet. But the funny thing is, his album just came out. He could still have that hit and come back around. But I don't know. What do you think?
So I'm much more familiar with Weezer's discography than Beck. Like, yeah. I liked Beck, and like I really loved Midnight Vultures, which is an album nobody ever talks about of his.
Yeah.
But with Weezer, like, obviously the Blue album was amazing.
Yeah.
And then Pinkerton is generally considered really amazing, although nobody really knew it till afterwards. Yeah. Like, it kind of failed when it first came out. And I just think for a band like Weezer, there's got to be so much pressure to chase that early success.
Yeah.
And I wonder for you if it's difficult to not feel like every album has got to be a 10, and if it's not, then this is over.
Yeah. No, I feel that way a little bit, for sure. Yeah.
But...
Oh, yeah. I definitely feel that way.
But here's the thing. Like, I remember in our last interview, we talked a little about Bruce Springsteen and how it's so rare for someone to be relevant for that long.
It is, yeah.
Like, multiple generations. Yep. But I also think, if you think of Springsteen, like, he's got his bona fide hits. But there's not that many. Like, there are just albums that were, like, no hits, but still a solid album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
And I feel like, especially when we talk about, like, by the numbers, by, like, radio hits, I think that, you know, you've got How He Loves Us.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talked about last time about the double-edged sword that can be, and how it's funny because, like, my favorite songs, even my favorite songs of yours, are not those songs. I'm so glad that you made solid album after solid album, even though it wasn't like Caleb is going to play this on the rotation, you know?
Totally. Totally. No, I mean, I've known that it helps to have a worship component, if you want to categorize them as worship and not worship. But, you know, for me, like, the How He Loves did better for other artists than did for me.
Which is fascinating.
It's actually, that's helped a lot because other artists depend on having their own version of the song on the radio.
Yeah.
It's been great for me to be able to make money doing my version of the song. Uh-huh. Some people get mad that other people's version is more popular, but I kind of like that. Because I can, you know, because it's less pressure for me. So I make more money off the publishing than from the song selling. And so that allows me to make records more the way I want.
Yeah.
So if you got to have a radio hit, it has to sound a certain way, and I just can't do it. You know?
And it seems like that would help you not be typecast as the How He Loves This guy.
Totally.
If other people are covering it.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And even like with, like, King of My Heart is a huge song. That's so weird because it's actually my wife's song. I wrote a little bridge for the end. She's the one who sings it. But right now it's my most streamed song.
Is it really?
On Spotify, yeah.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's people are covering it and it's doing really well. But I don't ever play it live if she's not with me. Like,
really?
You know,
yeah.
It's not like us. I don't think of it as my song. It's really her song.
Let's talk about the new album.
Yeah, sure.
Mercury and Lightning. There's also a title song. I was watching the video this morning.
Yeah.
And I know that that kind of thing really varies from artist to artist as far as the artist input and what it is. Like, sometimes it's just kind of like we get a director and then we do what they tell us to do, you know?
Yeah.
If Spike Jonze is directing your music video, you just do whatever Spike Jonze says. So how much input did you have on that?
I mean,
that one specifically. You have a few videos from this album.
Yeah. So Jared's a good friend of mine, so I honestly give him very little direction. You know, and originally the way that happened was he did a video for a song called Love at the End off of Borderland.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to New Zealand, and my buddy Eric's like, we got to do a video for Love at the End, you know, because, you know, it's sort of the last song to finish on the album, and we'd already sort of planned everything out, and then it's like that song seemed like a really great song to connect outside of some of our audiences that we, you know, sort of streams we roll in it. You know, it'd be a great, you know, addition to, especially speaking to, like, we're trying to get out of just sort of Christian music, you know.
Yeah.
And it's scary, put some money in songs that are not, you know, whatever.
Like,
this is
butter.
A great opportunity, yeah. And I was going to New Zealand, I was like, I literally don't have time to do it. And Eric's like, you know, he called Jared. My friend Jared, he's like, let me and Jared just put something together. I was like, okay. So I trust him. He's one of my best friends. He does all my design for my album, you know, does all the artwork. And so he and Jared put that video together while I was gone. They're like, yeah, just come down to the studio and film some stuff. So I went down for a couple hours and filmed, you know, a couple of those things. They put it together. And I loved it. So I was like, well, this is cool. So honestly, since then, I've just sort of let them do what they want to do. I think it's because they know me pretty well, and I feel like they really understand what I'm trying to communicate. Because I don't think I would do that with just any director. You know what I mean? Even if they were really good, feel like Jared and his team really understand kind of.
It's got to feel good to have people around you. Yeah. You feel like getting you that well.
It does. I literally saw the Wilderlove and then No Country was great too. And Jared did all of this. No Country was great too, but Wilderlove and Mercury and Lightning. And I liked the song better after I saw the video. Especially Mercury and Lightning. I was like, this makes the song better. I was like, how does a video make the song actually better? But it does, like, you know, and it all of a sudden made the song more moving, even to me, you know. So it's like, I don't know if other artists ever have that happen, but that's pretty incredible.
Well, it's a really powerful video, and I mean, really, there's kind of a storyline to it in a very abstract way, in the way that I think people could come away with their own interpretations. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's very. I saw some like kind of Terrence Malick kind of looking stuff, which I love, and it also, I feel like it really conveyed the song as well. There's obviously themes of faith, but also doubt and wrestling, and that kind of thing. And totally. I think it's really hard to communicate without just beating people over the head.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Totally.
And then the other thing I was thinking about it was. So there are some shots where, like, you're playing your guitar and there's, like, a ring of fire around you.
Yeah.
And I thought there's a way in which, especially I could imagine when you're making it, where it could come off as kind of a music video cliche or trope. But it doesn't. And I think that also probably required a lot of trust to the director as well.
Yeah,
when you see that written on paper, like, you want me to do what? No.
I know, totally. Well, I do remember, so I remember filming my scenes, and there's actors and people everywhere, you know, and I remember walking around doing my parts, and I see out of the corner of my eye, there's a girl who's definitely an actress walking around with just a bra on, and I was like, all right, Jared, I'm trusting you, bro. I'll trust you. I don't know what's happening over here. I was like, but I know we're friends and get me, so I...
It's going to get you kicked out of Evangelical.
I know. I was like, I don't know what's going on over there, but I know you're going to make it work. I know that you have a plan. I know you have a divine plan and a perfect plan for this video. Yeah.
Well, I mean, back to just the message of that song, Mercury and Lightning.
Yep.
The thing I've come back to in my life in the last year is that a lot of the difficulty of following Jesus is... believing that the way Jesus says the world is, as opposed to believing the way the world says it is.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even just simple stuff. It looks like the way things are is that wicked people prosper.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the message of the gospel is like, well, real prosperity looks like this other thing.
Yeah.
And so what makes the Christian life so difficult is believing that other narrative when everything looks like this narrative is correct. And in that song and in that video, just that, it looks as if someone has this encounter that seems real with Jesus. And then entirely everything after that is wrestling, with that, you know,
totally,
with like, was that narrative real? And then why do all these other counter narratives seem real all the time?
Yeah.
In my face.
Totally. And I think what's happening there, if you'll notice, there's a lot of, there's through the two sides, there's water and fire. Mm-hmm. And so the guy, he's definitely water. So he's, you know, being baptized and he's, you know, walking in the rain, and you see all this water. And so then I'm playing the guitar in the river, and the girl is fire, like she's smoking, like she's standing in a doorway that's on fire, like her whole world is on fire, right? And then, of course, I'm identifying with her. I'm playing in the ring of fire. So you have Mercury and Lightning is what I think Jared is. Mercury's the cool, you know, both fire and water things you can't grab. You try and grab the water, it slips your fingers. Fire, obviously, is going to burn you. And I think that's what the two of those characters are dealing with, is they're both like really struggling with identity and faith. And they're both trying to find God, you know, in their own way. And they're both really having a hard time with it. So he's trying to find God. He's obviously trying to, in the traditional ways, like I'm in church and I'm praying and I'm trying to be here. But he obviously is not getting what he's looking for is some relative or someone close to him is obviously sick.
Yeah.
You know, it looked, that's what it appears to be, sick. And he, I'm imagining that he is wrestling with that situation, you know. And then she, on the other hand, seems to just be like, to hell with it all. She's, you know, just trying to please herself in whatever way, you know, she can. And neither one of them have any real resolve, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think it sort of just speaks to the tension of, it doesn't glorify her lifestyle, but it also doesn't glorify his.
Romanticize.
That's the word I was looking for. It doesn't glorify her life or romanticize his. But there's kind of hope in there somewhere. I haven't put my finger on it yet. But it might just be just the, when you just put it out on the table and be like, man, we're all just looking for God. You know? And we're all trying so hard and we're all failing constantly. Right? You know? And that's okay. Like, I really wish all those people put the big signs on the side of the highway, you know, like, don't make me come down there, God.
Right.
Yeah. Or like, all those terrible, I mean, I don't know if you have them here, but we definitely do on the East Coast, especially when you get out in the country. I was like, why don't they put signs that would be like, you're okay, God. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like, and even like, if you even want to go, like, theologically, if you want to dig in, it's like, man's issue was that he didn't feel okay. You know, like, there was no law, right? There was no, you know, there was nothing for them to live up to, you know. But the temptation was like to not feel okay, to not be okay.
Yeah.
And everything they were tempted to have was actually all the things that they already had. God had already given them, right? To be like God, they were already like God, right? They're made in his image, right? They were, all these things, they were tempted. And so the temptation was not to have, the temptation was to feel lack, right?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, I don't know. I just wish people would, and to me, that's the message of the whole record is like, we already have the things we're looking for. It's both of those people are looking for something and not finding it, you know, but maybe it's something we already have, right? Yeah. So I guess you would say some people, you know, like we want, you know, feel loved or feel accepted. We're already accepted, right? Yeah. All these things are already done for us. And I'm not great with the theology, you know what I mean?
No, I think that's
good. But I do, for me, I feel like all of my problems stem from me feeling like I don't have what I already have, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too spacey here.
No, I like
you know,
it.
But yeah, I see it, and I think that I like all the tension in that video, you know, because that tension is much more like the way everybody lives,
yeah.
You know?
So I wanted to talk about Enemy Love.
It's yep.
One of the tracks on okay. the album. I read somewhere that you had said that part of the inspiration for that was you learning to kind of let go of control of
yeah.
things in your life. Because I think the way you put it was you want all these things, and to make that happen, you try to use control to make
yeah.
it happen. And that control winds up making things worse
yeah.
than you wanted them to be
totally.
In the first place.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you mentioned specifically was with your children
yeah.
and that you wanted to just, I don't think you put it this way, but kind of like spend every moment with them and like
yeah.
not miss any,
yeah, yeah.
anything in their life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you try to control that. And that was really meaningful for me. I think our kids are about the same age.
Yeah.
You've got 3 and I have 2, but I find that I think it's part about being a dad at this point in history where I feel like that cliche that women had to deal with of wanting to have it all. I feel that now
yeah,
as a
yeah.
man, like I want to spend all the time with my kids. But I also want to pursue a career for, you know, my personal, like creative reasons. And then also for putting food on the table,
yeah,
you
totally.
Know, and it's like, why are there only so many hours in the day to do that? And I just feel like you probably feel that more than most when you're having to tour. I mean, from what I understand from musicians, really the bread and butter comes from touring, not necessarily album sales.
Totally.
Just to have to take that time off when you do, or maybe you bring your kids with you sometimes, but just how that works itself out in your life.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. That, you know, the second verse, you know, is about heaven and a China girl. My wife has always been like, I feel like she has a China doll face, you know, face like a China doll. So I call her my China girl, you know?
Yeah.
You know, heaven and a China girl, heaven in an empty dress, heaven and three wild birds. So it's sort of like the progression. I meet my wife. Empty dress, we got married, obviously. You know, sexual innuendo, totally. You know, within marriage, right, whatever. Then we have three kids. And so it's this progression of like how blessed and awesome it is, but then how difficult it is to hold it all.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, having having stuff and awesome things is great, but no one tells you the price you have to pay to maintain it all, you know? And so it's like, I have this beautiful life, but I realize like me trying to maintain it all, hold it all in balance also is preventing me from experiencing the goodness of that life. Right? And I know that's really weird, especially I remember when I first started music. It's like, man, if I could just do this, I would make it. You know what I mean? But making it and keeping it are two different things, you know? Now you're getting a lot of sound back there. Is that right?
It's real life.
Sweet. Yeah, so making it and holding on to it are two different things. So I have this beautiful family, lots of great friends. I have this amazing job. You know, I volunteer at my church and, you know, I've got all this stuff, right? And it's all great, but making it all work together sometimes keeps me from enjoying any of it, you know? And I realized, especially when I was writing that song, I was like, the anxiety of my life is keeping me from enjoying my life. The anxiety of having kids is keeping me from enjoying my kids. People always make that comment and you get tired of hearing it, but it's so true, right? It's like they're kids for a split second and then they're not.
Yeah.
And you only get that little, and if you really think about it, you only get that little window, then you don't get it anymore. Right? People talk about the minivan. I personally don't mind a minivan. Like, doesn't, but some people have car stuff and they don't like having a minivan, but a friend of mine is like that. Hates the idea of a minivan, but he finally got one because he realized, he's like, I'm only going to need it for a few years.
It's true.
I was like, oh, crap. That's because they're not going to be kids anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually a tiny window. I'm like, dang, is my life keeping me from living my life? You know, and yeah, I'm becoming like an enemy to myself because my life is preventing me from living my life. You know, or more or less my ideal, or my what I think my life is supposed to be, is keeping me from enjoying the life that I have.
I mean, it's so ironic that thing of wanting everything to be perfect is also the thing that keeps us from living in the moment.
Totally.
Of just enjoying what is.
Absolutely. And you see it all the time. Like, I mean, I'm playing on a stage, play big shows. You know, like, people singing, and it's the most fun thing. I mean, you know what I mean? To walk out and play, it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, the guys will come off. I learned this early on. The guys will come off the stage, and I'll be like, yeah, we totally messed that up, and we need to fix this. And the guys will get bummed. And later on, I realized, like, oh, I need to not process the show right after the show because they just had an awesome time. But see, that to me, that is sort of like a picture of my whole life. Too often I'm critiquing my life while I'm living it. It's keeping me from living my life. I think the phone and all that doesn't help, you know, because I'm like, we're sitting in this awesome room and I'm like looking at my phone or something, like, yeah, but it could be more like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Instead of like, well,
check this out.
This is awesome. I'm in Austin, right? And tomorrow I'll be in Waco, and then Waco will be awesome. But if I'm like, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Maybe oversimplifying a little bit, but, you know. Yeah, but I feel that way in all my life sometimes. Like, I'm critiquing it to make it better, but then I'm like, but when it gets better, is it too late to enjoy it?
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I'll cease to be able to enjoy it anymore. You know? So, yeah, I definitely had anxiety issues making this record because of that kind of stuff. I had to, yeah, take a break.
Well, thanks so much for doing this, man.
Yeah, thank you. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Remember, you can find all the show notes for this show and all shows at shaneblackshear.com. Oh, and hey, have you ever thought about starting your very own podcast? I bet you have. And I think you should do it. In fact, I've created a course just for you to teach you everything that I've learned over the last couple of years producing Seminary Dropout. So if you're interested in podcasting and want to learn how, go check out my course. You can go there by typing in podcastingforeveryone.org. And you can get a special discount by typing in the discount code Seminary Dropout, all one word. That'll give you 25% off. So go check it out. If you have any questions, let me know. Okay. Thanks to those that left ratings and reviews on iTunes this week. Remember, that keeps the show front and center. Also, remember, you can find me on Twitter at @beardonabike. That's @beardonabike. Also, I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/ShaneBlackshear123. And remember that Seminary Dropout is listener supported. You can visit supportseminarydropout.com and press Become a Patron. Remember, this music you're listening to right now is by D.L. Rossi. You can find him online on iTunes and at dlrossi.com. All right, thanks again for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Love you. Take care. Yeah.